For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. He does not make money off the site, but he does need money in order to run the site. Those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site. It is May the 19th, and we are on page 406 in Parashat Yisro. And we're up to Parakaf, chapter 20, Pasuk Aleph, verse 1. So these are the Aseret HaDibros, and we have an introductory Pasuk, one verse introduces the whole thing, and then we have, of course, the ten commandments, the Aseret HaDibros. Vayidaber Elokim es kol ha-dvorim mo'el le'mor. Hashem spoke all of these words, saying. Chazal sages tell us that this is not just an introductory Pasuk. What this means to say is that Hashem first said all 10 of the Aseret HaDibros, all 10 of the commandments, in one utterance, in one speaking. At the Aseret HaDibros, as we've mentioned before, Hashem was revealed in a way that had never happened since and has never happened since. It was the greatest revelation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu since the creation of the world that has ever happened. When that happened, many of the laws of nature were turned on their head. Now the reason why the laws of nature were turned on their head were for a couple of different reasons for it. One is, as we will see, that the way the Torah was given, it was the Aseret HaDibros, the Ten Commandments, were understood more profoundly because of the fact that some of the laws of nature were suspended, as we'll see in a moment. But beyond that, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu is revealed completely, then the laws of nature cease to have any meaning. Because the laws of nature are a set of rules by which Hashem runs this world. We know that everything is run by Hashem. Hashem created the world. And the nature itself is a system by which Hashem runs the world. And He has said, this is the system I'm going to use. When He created the world, this is the system. There's going to be gravity, and there's going to be whatever other laws of motion and things of that nature that govern the natural order. But really, the natural order is nothing more than a created item, just like everything else is created. And the natural order has no more right to exist than anything else does. Hashem can just as easily decide the laws of nature won't be the way things run. But that's not the way He normally does things. In Hashem being completely revealed, or revealed as much as He is able or willing to reveal Himself to mere human beings, in the giving of the Torah, when that happens, then the revelation is that there is nothing else but Hashem. Nature is not God. Hashem is God. If one believes that the laws of nature are immutable, then nature itself is God. And nature is not God. Nature is something which was created by Hashem. And so in the revelation of Hashem, everything has to get turned on its head. The Chazal tell us that they were able, as I mentioned last week, to see the thunder and hear the lightning. Whatever that means, to see the thunder and hear the lightning, somehow their senses became such, or the way that their senses worked, they were able to perceive things that one normally cannot perceive. The same goes for the way Hashem spoke. The most famous part of the Aseret HaDibros in which this idea of one utterance including many different words is when we get to the fourth commandment, which is Shabbos. And there we find that in Parashas Yisro, we'll talk about this when we get there, but that here in Parashas Yisro it says, Zochar es yom ha-Shabbos lekadesh, so remember the day of Shabbos to sanctify it. Whereas in Parashas Va'eschanan, when the Aseret HaDibros is repeated, and there it says, Shamor es yom ha-Shabbos lekadesh, protect or guard the laws of Shabbos to sanctify them. So our sages tell us that even though it says Zohar, remember, in one place, and Shamar, guard, in the other place, it's not that Hashem said it twice. Hashem said it once, and He said Zohar v'Shamar, as we say in L'Chadodi, b'dibur echad, in one utterance. Zohar and Shamar were said simultaneously. The Gemara says, ma sheha peh eno yachol edaber, that a mouth cannot say, and the ear cannot hear. A human being cannot say two words simultaneously. It is impossible. The human ear cannot hear two words simultaneously. That doesn't mean that we can't have the sound waves of two different words enter our ears simultaneously, but that we can perceive and understand the two words that were said simultaneously. That is impossible for a human being to do. But at the Aseret HaDibros, we were both, Hashem spoke the two words simultaneously, and we heard both words simultaneously in the same tone of voice, the same decibel level, and yet we understood both words, Zachar and Shamar, at the same time. This pasuk is telling us that was not only true of the words of Zachar and Shamar, that was true of the entire Aseret HaDibros. Before He spoke each Dibur, each of the commandments independently, first Hashem said all 10 of them in one utterance, something which we can't even demonstrate. The only way to demonstrate it would be to get 10 people to say 10 words at the same time, and we would listen to that, and somehow we would understand it all without knowing in advance what they're going to say. That's what happened with the Aseret HaDibros. And it wasn't just 10 words, because each of the Dibros, each of the commandments, encompass many words, as we will see. None of them are only one word long. Some of them are 2 words long, but and some of them are much longer than that. And Hashem said all 10 simultaneously, and we heard all 10 simultaneously. Baruch atah Adonai Elohim HaMelech HaOlam Shehakol Nivra. There is an advantage to sight over hearing, and there is an advantage to hearing over sight. Each of those senses have an advantage one over the other. When Rav Moshe Shapiro was here a little over a week ago, and he mentioned this idea, and recently I heard the idea repeated, actually. And that is that when one listens to something, the words are heard one at a time, and the picture, that's the wrong word to use, but the story of what the person is hearing is built up over time. It takes a little while. As you listen to me speak, you're hearing one word at a time, and your brain is processing each word as I say it, because you're listening to every single word.
Yeah.
So you're listening to each word as I say it, and your brain is forming an idea of what I'm saying by putting the words together. But it takes time. Whereas sight, you see the entire picture at once. You look at something, and the entire picture is there all at once. It doesn't take time for the brain to process the picture. The picture is there. So that sight is faster than sound, hearing. Looking at something is faster than listening to something. Because when you look, you can see it all at once. Whereas listening, you need to listen to it one syllable at a time until you've got the whole thing in your head. In that way, sight is more powerful, is better than listening. A picture is worth 1,000 words. The Gemara says, "Lotei shmiya gadol me'ri'iya." Hearing something is not as great as seeing something in terms of witnessing something. To be a witness, you have to see it. Hearing isn't good enough. On the other hand, when one sees an entire picture all at once, it's very easy to miss a detail. Because you're seeing so much at one time, so you form an idea of what it is that you're seeing, but it's very easy to miss details. And if you look at something and close your eyes and try to recall every detail, unless you have a photographic memory, you're going to miss a lot of details. What was each person wearing? What was the color of each of the books on the shelf? How many books were on each shelf? How many chairs were on the table? How many lights are in the room? How many tiles? How many? There's so much that a person can miss when they just look at something and close their eyes. Whereas when one has the time, because listening takes time, but in developing the understanding of what the person is saying by listening, a person will miss fewer details. A person will pick up most of the details because of the fact that it's going step by step in somewhat of a sequential way. So in that way, listening is more advantageous than seeing. With Matan Torah, with the giving of the Torah, Hashem gave the Jews the gift that they were able to see what is normally heard, and they were able to hear what is normally seen, which means, or at least one way of understanding it is, that He gave the Jews the ability that their seeing had the advantage of sound, in that they didn't miss any details. Just as when you listen, you're able to pick up all the details, when they saw, they were able to see all the details. Everybody had a photographic memory. They were able to recall everything and process everything that they were seeing simultaneously. And what they heard did not take time to listen to. It was an entire process at once. All the words were said at once. And they heard it at once. And every word was processed. It didn't need to be sequential. It didn't need to be in some sort of one after the other order. It was all at once. So they were able to see sounds and hear sights. What it means is, at least one understanding is, they were able to use the advantage of seeing even with sounds, and they were able to use the advantage of hearing even with sight. So that everything was simultaneous and yet understood. No details lacking. And here we have the first example of that with this introductory statement. First, He just gave it all at one moment. Nevertheless, after He did that, He then spelled out each and every one of the Aseres HaDibros. Now we know that, as I mentioned before, and we'll see it later on, we Jews were only able to handle two, the first two of the ten. But it's not that we didn't hear all ten. We did hear all ten in that one utterance that Hashem said at first. We got it all. But then when He afterwards went through each one independently, that's where we lasted for two of the ten, and then we said to Moshe, we can't handle it anymore. Now the Torah does not interrupt the Aseres HaDibros, the Ten Commandments, with that
request.
With that interlude. It rather just goes through all ten, and later we will discover that they only lasted for two. Why was it necessary for Hashem to repeat all ten, and this time do it sequentially, when He had already said all ten simultaneously, and we were able to hear and understand all ten when He said them? Why did He then go through each one again, this time independently? What would be the advantage of doing that if we already heard all ten and we understood them?
Emphasis.
Okay, one great answer is emphasis. Very good. Even if we already heard it and we processed it, but Hashem may have gone through each one independently to emphasize each one. It's one thing to have heard it and processed it, but when you hear it a second time, and this time each one is said on their own, the message is much stronger. Even if no new information is learned, nevertheless, the information is much stronger. When I call my child and I say, come here, come here, he didn't hear anything new, but he got the point.
Rabbi, when you get old enough,
things repeated.
Okay. He was going, Moshe was gotten, needed to write everything down so that we would have it forever. So how do you write down an infusion of everything at the same time?
That's a good point, but he didn't write it down now.
And Hashem's the one who wrote the
deeds. Yeah, well, nothing was written yet. That's going to be during the 40 days that Moshe goes upstairs and stays there and comes down with the Luchos, with the tablets. And as Zina just said, the first set of tablets were not written by Moshe, they were written by Hashem.
So, but they were, I couldn't say enunciated, but each one was written separately, wasn't...
Yes, each one was written separately, that is correct, yeah. The Aseret HaDibros also are only 10 commandments. That's why they're called the Aseret HaDibros. They're the 10 commandments. There are 613 mitzvot in the Torah. Now the truth is that the 10 do include a few details which could be counted as more than just 10. But nevertheless, it certainly is not all 613. So what is so special about these Aseret HaDibros, these 10 commandments, Tzugezun? After all, there are many other mitzvot, Tzugezun. So you'll say, well, these are the core, these are the most important of all the mitzvot. There's nothing more important than what's here. I mean, there's a lot of important things in the Aseret HaDibros, and one might be able to argue that they are very, very important, perhaps the most important, but it's hard to ignore all the other mitzvot that there are in the Torah. I mean, there's no mention in the Aseret HaDibros of building the Beit HaMikdash, of building the temple. That seems to be a pretty significant mitzvah. There's no mention in the Aseret HaDibros of the fact that we have to pray and hope for Mashiach to come. That seems to be a pretty significant mitzvah. Doesn't say it anywhere over here. There's no mention in the Aseret HaDibros of the mitzvah to study Torah, which we know is the greatest of all mitzvahs. Doesn't say it anywhere in the Aseret HaDibros. So what makes the Aseret HaDibros so special that they are considered to be the most important part of Torah? After all, when Hashem had us at the mountain and gave us the Torah, He didn't give us everything at one shot. He gave us the Ten Commandments. He gave us the Aseret HaDibros. It's afterwards, when Moshe goes up for 40 days, that the rest is given to him. So what's so special about these Aseret HaDibros? So our sages say, and the commentaries work on this to show it, that all of the Torah is merumas. All the Torah is hinted to and alluded to somewhere within the Aseret HaDibros. There is nothing in the Torah that you can't find a place in the Aseret HaDibros where it is alluded to. Now, I'm not pretending that I can do that, but that is what our sages tell us, that every part of the Torah is embedded somewhere in the Aseret HaDibros. There have been commentaries who have worked on this and attempted to show how all the mitzvot really are embedded in the Aseret HaDibros, in the Ten Commandments. But that is why the Aseret HaDibros are really the focal point of the mitzvot that Hashem commanded us to do. There was a push in the time of the Gemara when formal prayer was being established. You know that davening prayer doesn't need to be formal. There initially, when we davened, it was each person putting together their own set of prayers, depending on what they understood would be the appropriate thing for them to do. But as time went on and people lost the art of being able to formulate appropriate prayers themselves, the Anshei Knesset HaGadol, the men of the Great Assembly, established Shmoneh Esrei, established the main part of davening that we do, and others subsequently filled in various parts of davening, so that today davening is very formal. Open up a sitter, and you have davening spelled out for how to do it. And we don't tamper with that. We say that we certainly don't know well enough how to formulate our own. We can say our own independent davening, but that's in addition to what it says in the sitter. We daven what it says in the sitter. That's our basis. That's our basic davening. And then from there we can add our own if we wish. In the time when davening was being established in a formal manner, there was a strong push for the Aseret HaDibros, the Ten Commandments, to be part of the formal davening. Just like Shema is part of the formal davening, let the Aseres HaDibros be part of the formal davening that should be recited every day. A person should say all Aseres HaDibros. It should be part of the, and that, it shouldn't just be something a person would say on the side. It should be the focal point of all of davening, because it is the focal point of the whole Torah. But it was not done. And the reason it was not done is because had it been done, there was a fear that people would begin to think that the only part of the Torah is the Aseres HaDibros, and the rest is not really part of the Torah. And there was a fear, there was a danger that the Aseres HaDibros, the Ten Commandments, would be so emphasized that people would begin to think it is the only real Torah. After all, that's what Hashem said to us at the mountain. He didn't say the rest of the Torah to us at the mountain. So one may mistakenly believe it is the only part of the Torah that matters. Everything else is not really Torah. And therefore, they did not incorporate the Aseres HaDibros into the davening for fear that people would think that. And that way we preserve the knowledge that the entire Torah is the Torah, not just the Aseres HaDibros. Nevertheless, it is still the main part of the Torah in which everything else is embedded. Some do have the custom to say the Aseres HaDibros every day, but it is not part of formal davening. It's not something that is done b'tzibur, it's not done in a congregation together every day. Unlike Shema, which is done together, but not the Aseres HaDibros. Yes?
If everything else in the Torah is embedded in these 10 sayings, are these 10 indeed part of the 613? Or are they a separate category? And if they indeed are commandments, why are they always referred to as Dibros instead of Mitzvot?
Yeah. Okay, let's tackle that independently. Yes, there are Mitzvot that are here of the 613. Some of them are here. We're actually going to discuss some of them presently. And
are
the,
you saying that, I'm sorry, did you say that these 10 are included in the 613?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. The ones that are explicit, when we say that everything is embedded, it means that it's hinted to it through nuances. But there are, but the simple meaning of the psukim do tell us much about very many of the mitzvahs. So that the mitzvah, as we'll see, the mitzvah of not having idols, and the mitzvah of Shabbos, and the mitzvah of honoring parents, and not murdering, and all that. It's all, those are part of the 613 mitzvahs, yes.
So are there other mitzvahs in the Torah that have hints of other mitzvahs?
Yeah, but not like over here. This is much more than everywhere else. Your question about why they're called 10 dibros, 10 literally utterances, rather than 10 mitzvos, is because there's more than 10 mitzvos here, as we'll see. That there are details. The question is always how to count the 613 mitzvos. You know, the Torah doesn't come with little footnotes that label each of the mitzvos as you get to them. And there is a disagreement how to count. We know there are 613 because the Gemara says there are 613. But there are disagreements about how to count them. The Rambam, Maimonides, has his count. And you have others who have their counts. There's different ways of counting them. There are some that everybody agrees are how you count them, and others there's a disagreement. One of the disagreements is that when you have many details within one mitzvah, is it one mitzvah or is it several mitzvahs? Just as an example, you have with the wearing of tefillin. So there's the tefillin on the arm, and there's the tefillin on the head. Well, is that two mitzvahs or is that one mitzvah? No. It's not so simple. Maybe it's two, maybe it's one. Different ways of counting it. So here as well, within, for example, the mitzvah of Shabbos, there may be multiple mitzvahs within the mitzvah of Shabbos. Within the mitzvah of not worshipping other gods, there may be multiple mitzvahs in not worshipping other gods. So the Aseres HaDibros may be more than just 10 mitzvahs, but they are 10 dibros, 10 utterances. So now the first of the Aseres HaDibros. Anochi Hashem Elokecha, I am Hashem your God, Asher Hatzeisicha Meretz Mitzrayim, Mibeis Avodim, that took you out of the land of Egypt from a house of servitude. That is the end of the first of the Aseres HaDibros. Right there. I am Hashem your God, who took you out of the land of Egypt from a house of slavery. many of the Mefarshim, the Gemara itself, points out that it does not say, I am Hashem, your God, who
created
the universe. It doesn't say that. It says, I am Hashem, your God, who took you out of Egypt. Why does it say, I am Hashem, your God, who took you out of Egypt? Wouldn't it be more profound to say, I am Hashem, your God, who created everything?
Well, he's talking to the nation of the Jewish people. And so that wasn't, that didn't start with the creation, that started with the giving of the Torah.
Okay. So that means that what Hashem is saying is very personal. This is not Hashem coming and saying something which is very general for the whole universe. All of mankind would be included if it said, I am Hashem your God who created everything. That's everything and everybody. But Hashem made it very personalized. He said, I am Hashem your God who took you out of Egypt. That's a very personalized commandment. Clearly, Hashem is talking to the Jewish people. He's not talking to everybody else. The Torah was given to us. It wasn't given to everybody else. This statement is false to any other nation but Jews. It simply isn't true. He did not take anybody else out of the land of Egypt. He took us out of the land of Egypt. Clearly, the Torah is specifically addressing the Jewish people. The Torah was given to us. And Hashem makes it a very personal thing. He wants it to be a relationship between Himself and us. Not some sort of a commandment, a book of laws, which is dry and aloof and just has the do's and don'ts without any way of connecting to Hashem. Hashem is saying, I'm Hashem your God who took you out. We're connected. And you, my expectation of you is because we have this connection, because I took you out of Egypt. Yes?
So, Rabbi, thank you. And I have two questions. Other people do quote and live by the Ten Commandments. Is their first commandment including this?
I cannot tell you what other religions believe. All other religions are mistaken. Ours is the only one that's true. So I can't tell you what other religions believe. But what I can tell you is that believing that the seven mitzvos that everyone is obligated to follow, not just Jews, the Sheva Mitzvos B'nai Noach, the one of them is to believe in one God. Now, to believe in one God precludes idolatry and paganism. It also precludes shituf. It precludes believing in multiple gods. There is only one. That one is not physical. They have to believe that also. But the source for this Sheva Mitzvos B'nai Noach, the seven mitzvos for all the people of the world, is not the Aseres HaDibros. The source is Hashem speaking to Noach back, actually speaking to Adam HaRishon, to Adam back in Bereishis. That's where we derive it all from, not from here.
Okay. So my next question, since these are the ten Dibros and ultimately include a lot of mitzvahs, there's no thou shalt or anything in front of this command or in front of this saying. So the fact that it's here listed with other things like keep the Shabbos and honor your parents and don't murder and everything, is this saying that is this a command that you should believe?
Yeah, you bring up a good point. It does not say you must believe that I am Hashem your God. It doesn't say that. It just says, I am Hashem, your God.
Yeah.
Right. So this is a constant belief that we have to have. We always have to know that Hashem is the one who created the universe. Well, that He took us out of Egypt, but that He is the God. He is in control of everything. So, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, I am Hashem, your God, means I am the one who's in control of everything.
Because everything, we have a choice. We have a choice. I guess we have a choice with the other mitzvahs, too.
We always have a choice.
We have a choice.
Yes.
So he's saying he's a source.
This is to believe. This is not, see, with Shabbos, you don't have to believe in Shabbos. You have to keep Shabbos. Well, there's no mitzvah to believe in Shabbos.
Yeah.
Right? The mitzvah is to keep Shabbos. Now, it's true, the reason why we keep Shabbos is because we believe that Hashem created the world in 6 days and rested on the seventh, etc. But the mitzvah is to keep Shabbos. Don't do what you're not supposed to do on Shabbos, and do what you are supposed to do on Shabbos. So, right, don't cook, yes, make kiddush. Those are the do's and don'ts of Shabbos. But there's no mitzvah to believe in Shabbos. There's no mitzvah to believe in your parents. You have to honor your parents. This is to believe this statement. I am Hashem, your God, who took you out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery, house of slavery.
Everything comes from this.
Yeah.
Shlomo Melch says, Reishis Chachma Yiras Hashem. The first thing you have to know is who's the boss.
Right. Right. Okay, so that's the first one. Yes, Dr. Carey.
Also, it seems to me that Hashem is saying, you owe me your life. I saved you out of Egypt. And you're kind of betrothed to me or beholden to me.
Well, that is true. It is true that Hashem is saying, I took you out, and therefore I have reason to have expectations of you. I took you out, you'd still be there if it wasn't for me, and therefore I have an expectation. But see, that's also a relationship. That's also a give and take. It's not just believe me because I said so. Yeah.
I see this first commandment. Well, it's not really a commandment. It's what Hashem is saying.
It's a statement of fact.
A statement of fact. Right. Statement.
It's a statement of fact. That's all
exactly.
It is.
Exactly. And so there's no choice in this particular detail.
So Hashem is just stating the fact, and that's what it is. Deal with it. Right? Right. Okay. Okay, good. Pasuk Gimel, verse 3. Now from here through Pasuk Vav through 6 is the second of the Aser HaDibros, but it encompasses many details. Lo yelecha Elohim acherim al panoi, you shall not have for yourself other gods in front of me. Lo sa'as elecha fesa elecha tmuno, you shall not make for yourself an image. How do they say it here? A carved image, nor any likeness. Asher b'shamay mimal, that is in the heavens above. Asher b'aretz mitachas, and is the land. It is in the land below. Asher b'mayim mitachas aretz, and is in the water under the land. Lo tishtachav elohem, you shall not bow to them. Lo sa'avdim, you shall not serve them. Ki anochi Hashem elokecha, for I am Hashem your God. Kel kana, literally it means a jealous God. Pokeid avon avos al banim, who visits the sins of the fathers upon the children, al shileishim, on the third generation, which is the grandchildren, v'ari be'im, and on the great grandchildren, the fourth generation, l'son ay, for those who hate me, for my enemies, v'oseh chesed la'alafim, and I am the one who does kindness for 2,000 generations, le'ohavai, for those who love me, u'l'shomrei mitzvosai, and those who guard my mitzvos. That was a whole bunch of information in the second of the Aseres HaDibros. Let's go back and take it step by step. You shall not have other gods in front of me. So there's two things we have to address over here. First of all, what does it mean, other gods? How can there be other gods? I thought there's only one God. How can there be other gods?
Well, there can't. But people don't, not all people go directly to the source. They feel like they have to go through something.
So then it's not another God. How can the Torah call that another God?
Well, there were people believing in other gods.
Okay, so what you're suggesting is it means you shall not have that which people think are other gods.
Yes.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Another way of understanding it is that you shall not have, other gods means gods that, well, the way you're saying it, the way you translate it is, gods of others. You shall not have gods of others. It doesn't mean other gods, because there are no other gods, but gods of others. Another way of explaining it is that you shall not have these gods that they act as other. As Rashi says, when you call out to the one real God, there's a relationship. There's a give and take. When one calls out to an idol, it is an other. It's not listening. It can't listen. It has no ability to listen. So therefore, it's other. It is not relating to the thing that is, to the person that is calling to it. Either way, obviously, it does not mean other gods, because there are no real other gods. Now, al panai, in front of me, Chazal tell us means, you shall not have other gods as long as I exist. You shall not, that's what it means, in front of me. As long as I exist, you shall not have other gods. If I ever don't exist, then you can have other gods. Now, since God always exists, and it is impossible for Him not to exist, therefore, essentially, this is saying you shall never have other gods. So then why phrase it this way? Why phrase it, you shall not have other gods in front of me? Which means while I'm around. As if there's a time when I'm not around. It's not true. He's always around. Why can't it just say, you shall not have any other gods forever? Or, you shall not have any other gods. Don't qualify it. If you just say, you shall not have any other gods, obviously it means forever. Why should we think it's limited? Shouldn't have any other gods. So what's this business of al panai in front of me?
Well, if he's not here, we're not going to be here.
So then why say it?
What about when he's hidden? When he's hidden from us?
He's still around.
He is, but we don't see it. We don't know he's there.
So you're suggesting
something else. Because, like they did with the golden calf. Moshe didn't come back, they didn't see him, they didn't see God, so therefore they took something else.
So are you suggesting it's permitted to have other gods when Hashem is hidden?
No, that's what he's saying, is I'm going to be hidden from you, you're not going to know I'm here, you're going to think I'm not here, but you still have to know I'm here, don't take another god.
So you're saying when he says, don't have any other gods in front of me, he's saying, it's always in front of me. Even when you don't think it's in front of me, it is in front of me.
Yeah.
So he's emphasizing that in front of me is always the case. Okay. One could have made a mistake in that and thought the opposite.
Right.
Okay.
Well, since the next part is the carved images and everyone else around them at the time was doing things like that, and we had just come from this very idolatrous place.
True.
That maybe God, as the Father, felt that He had to be more explicit with us. I'm always here, don't make anything else.
Okay, so he's emphasizing, I'm always around. Right?
But I think there's a real emphasis because they had been around idols.
Right.
You know, don't do that.
Right, so Mrs. Kaiser was saying at times when he's not so obviously there, he's saying, I am there. And what you're saying is, Hashem had to emphasize it because they were coming from a culture that was so involved in idolatry, he had to emphasize, I'm here, you can't do that.
Yeah, I mean, God's always there,
it's emphasis.
Choose not to find Him, that's your choice.
Okay.
This may be a way of telling Jews that if you ever leave me, I'll be gone.
Okay, if you leave me, then I'll leave you, in other words. Okay, good.
Could the Nehakash Baruch was expressing in terms of a human beings will understand it? Because Hashem doesn't have a face, you know, and before Him, He sees everything anyway. But maybe put in terms, it shouldn't be idols before me, for our benefit to understand, because maybe put in human terms.
Okay, so putting it in human terms so that it's that easier for us to grasp the idea.
That's right.
Okay.
I think it might be simpler than some of these ideas. If we're having a relationship face to face with somebody, and you say, for instance, you don't want anything in front of you, it means that thing is interposed between a human and between God. He doesn't want anything. In other words, it's not only in front of Him, it's between us and Him. And He doesn't want us going through anything else to get to Him. He doesn't want any intermediaries.
He wants it to be direct. Don't have anything else between us. It should just be directly to me. So that the reason or the emphasis of this commandment is that it's as long as I'm around, meaning because I'm here, which is always the case, but because I'm here and because I have a direct relationship with you, there shouldn't be anything else here. It's just between you and me. There shouldn't be anything else between us.
In fact, using this kind of terminology makes it seem, in an anthropomorphic way, that he's facing us.
Right.
He's talking to us and facing us, you know. And,
right. Al Panai literally means on my face.
Right.
That means in front of me. Right. Yeah.
I was thinking perhaps maybe he's telling us that he is first. He should be first in our thoughts. That he is Hashem and he is first. So we shouldn't be thinking of other things being more important than Hashem. So I don't know where I'm going.
No, so Alpanai in front of me means because I am the most important thing, that is the reason why you can't have anything else between us. Right. Okay.
You shouldn't make anything more bigger or
more important than me.
More important.
Right, right. Okay, very good. Now, Pasuk Dalet, verse 4. Lo sasa lecha fetza v'chol tmuna. You shall not make any image nor any likeness. Asher b'ashamayim imal of anything that's in the heavens above, asher ba'aretz mitachas, and on the ground below, asher b'amayim, and in the water, mitachas ba'aretz, under the land. This pasuk, this verse, includes many things, and there are a lot of nuances here that the Gemara expounds upon in order to understand what exactly is being included in this verse and what is not being included in this verse. However, there are a lot of things that are included here that one may not have realized is included. You see, most of us believe that we can't make any kind of image that we are going to bow down to. But can we make an image that we're not going to bow down to? This verse does not say, don't make an image and bow down to it. It says, don't make an image. There is an independent prohibition against making images. Now, what's an image? Is an image a statue? Is an image an engraving? Is an image a picture? A drawing? A photograph? How about a doll? A baby doll? Is that an image? What's an image? Anything can be an image. Like, what's an image?
Could be an angel.
What?
Could be an angel.
Could be an angel. Okay. So what is it? And what is included in this verse? So from this verse, it sounds like everything's included. Heavens above, earth below, water under the earth, and where else is there? I mean, it sounds like everything is included. So our sages derive from various nuances, both here and other places in the Torah, that the main problem are those things, are the sun, the moon, stars, people, images of those things, are more of a problem than other types of things. In theory, there could be other types of things that also would be included in this prohibition, but those things, sun, moon, stars, and people, are a greater level of concern. When I was in Columbus, Ohio, in Colo there, one of my colleagues gave a class once on this subject, and the flyer that we sent out, which was the question of making images and what's included and what's not included in this prohibition, the picture on the flyer had the Statue of Liberty. Right. So what is included in this and what is not? So in general, most of us are not sculpting. Maybe somebody in this room has a hand at art and sculpts, but I think most people are generally just drawing, if they're doing anything, pictures, as in photographs, and drawing, in other words, two-dimensional likenesses of something, whether it's through drawing, whether it's through a photograph, whether it's digital, but it's some sort of a two-dimensional replica of something. When it's two-dimensional, it's many of the commentaries say that none of this would apply if it's two-dimensional. That when it says a likeness or an image, the implication is a three-dimensional likeness or an image, like a statue. But if it's just two-dimensional, it would be okay. Now, when I say that, I want you to know that there are those who are stringent even with two-dimensional likenesses.
A photo album.
Even a photograph. There are those. It's not like you can't find opinions that say that you're not allowed to take pictures of people. I mean, photographs of people. Now, obviously, that's not standard practice. Most of the world, most of the Jewish world, does take the lenient view with taking pictures of people. And, you know, who doesn't have a wedding album where they, right? It's a common thing. I'm just pointing out to you, it's not like you can't find those who are stringent, because there are different opinions over here. But in that one, most everyone is lenient when it's only two-dimensional. Even if it's a picture of the sun or moon, to be lenient. Another room for leniency is if it's not a complete item. So that if you have, let's say, a...
baby?
What's that? Well, before we get to that, if you have a sculpture of a person, and it's a beautiful likeness, I mean, it's really an unbelievable replica of, you know, someone sculpts, an artist sculpts, and it's a great sculpture of a person, but it's only from the shoulders and up. It's only a bust. So there, many of the commentaries, again, permit it because it's not a complete person. And if it's not a complete person, there's more room for leniency. A third room for leniency is if it is not a if it's in a degrading manner. It's not the kind of thing which would be looked at and pointed to and say, "Wow, look at that incredible likeness." So that things which are mevuza, which are degraded, there it would not be an issue either. That's with the baby doll. Thing comes in. That over there, most of those things are.
Some people just do something.
We'll get to that in a minute.
Yeah.
But I'm saying, but most baby dolls are not. They're just not. They're not in what we would call something you show off in your collection of art. It's something you give the kids to play with.
Yeah.
Is that right? So that's why those are generally not a problem. There are those who are stringent to make sure to nick the ear or the nose or something like that of the doll so that it will not be a perfect likeness of a human being. But again, it's not a perfect likeness anyway if, let's say, the baby doll has only four fingers, which often when they make smaller versions of people, it's too small to make the fingers the regular sizes. They'll make it with only three fingers and a thumb. You know, that's the way very often they'll make a baby doll like that. So that's already not a perfect likeness of a human being. So generally speaking, these only become issues when you have, or I should say, and I shouldn't say they only become issues, because again, you can find those who are stringent across the board. But in terms of where you really do have a question of, it's very hard to find a leniency, it's going to be a complete picture, and it's three-dimensional, and it's beautiful, something which you would put in your art collection, that's where you start getting into issues of this prohibition. So that if it's a full statue of a human being, and it's a perfect likeness of a human being, or sun, moon, that sort of thing, that's where you're going to start getting into these issues.
Do you mean something like the statue of David in Italy?
I'm not familiar with it.
It's a full statue of a human being.
So as I said, I mean, if it's a full thing, this is where you're going to start getting into issues of this question. So the truth is, the Statue of Liberty, perhaps there is something to speak about over there. I don't know. I mean, it doesn't matter because we don't own it. We don't have anything to do with it. But something like that, there could be a question as to whether it is acceptable to make something like that. So if anybody in this room is an artist, I have a cousin who actually is a pretty accomplished artist, and she studied these laws in depth before embarking on her career because she knew that it's not a simple matter, and she knows what is permitted and what is not permitted. So someone who is an accomplished artist it's very hard for me to deal with this kind of thing because I can't draw a straight line. But someone who really does, they have the ability to draw and to sculpt, etc. So it is worthwhile to look into this because there are certain cases where it isn't so simple to find a leniency. But most of the things that people do in their everyday lives are not a problem because it's what to rely on for leniency. At the same time, it's not crazy if you find someone who is stringent. You will find people out there who are very, very stringent. There are people who are very stringent not to allow their pictures to be taken for this reason.
In Europe, there are a lot many.
Yeah, there are those who are, yeah. It's not the only reason, but that's one of the reasons. Now we get into the actual, Pasuk Hey, verse 5, the actual prohibition against worshipping them.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
Where it says, the heavens above or the earth mm-hmm. below or in the water beneath the earth.
Yes.
The water beneath the earth is strange, but is that related to when we thank God for spreading out the earth?
On top of the water, it could be. I don't know if it has to mean literally below the underneath the earth, or just lower than the earth.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I'm not sure if it has to be a literal translation of just literally beneath the earth.
Okay,
but it does sound like that. Pasuk Hey, verse 5, Lo tishtachav elohem, you shall not bow to them. For los of them, you shall not worship them. Why? Ki anochi Hashem Elokecha, ki al kanayim, Hashem your God, a jealous God, poked avon avos habonim, who visits the sins of the fathers on the sons, al shileishim, on the third generation, v'aribayim, and on the fourth generation, l'sonai, for those who are my enemies, v'osachet al alafim, and does kindness for 2,000 generations, though avai, for those who love me, u'lusham remitzvosai, and for those who guard my mitzvos. The prohibition against worshipping anything but God, that means worshipping an idol, worshipping a planet, worshipping the sun or the moon, worshipping the rain, any of these things, worshipping anything but Hashem, worshipping an angel, worshipping anything but Hashem. So there are four ways of worship which are prohibited across the board. It doesn't matter what the object that is being worshipped is. They all share the same four prohibitions. You're not allowed to bow to them. That's what it says here. Lo tishtachav elohem, you shall not bow to them. And then there are three other ones. One is to slaughter an animal for them. Another is to throw the blood for them. And another is libations, pouring wine for them. Those are the four things. It's zicha, which is slaughtering an animal for them. Haktara. One second. I said it wrong. Excuse me. One second. Zicha, haktara, hishtachava, and
Human sacrifice.
I got to get these four right. And we got this on. This is like forever. It's being recorded. I'm getting it all wrong. It's zicha, haktara, nisach. Right, I'm sorry, I said it wrong. It's slaughtering. That's correct. Libations is correct. And burning for them. Not throwing the blood. Burning, like burning incense or burning something for them, for these idols, and then bowing. So it's slaughtering, burning, libations, and bowing. Those four are prohibited across the board. Even if that's not the way the item is typically worshipped, it doesn't make a difference. Even if that's not the way that the particular sect of people that worships this thing, they don't bow to it. They don't pour wine for it. It doesn't make a difference. Those things are still going to be prohibited across the board. In addition to those four, it's also prohibited to worship the item in the way that it is typically worshipped. But that will be specific to that particular object and that particular paganism. So that the type of idolatry where the way to worship it is to dance in front of it, then it'll be prohibited to dance in front of it. If the way to worship it is to stand on your head in front of it, you can't stand on your head in front of it. And as the Gemara describes, there were certain types of idolatries where the way it was worshipped was to throw a stone at it. You would think throwing a stone at it would be a way of degrading it. But no, since that's the way it was worshipped, you can't throw a stone at it. So, again, you have the four, which are universal, and then specific to each of the of the idolatries, the way they're typically worshipped, are also prohibited. Yes?
If we've already been told not to have any kind of an image or a likeness, what's the point of telling us not to bow down when we're not to have it to begin with?
Well, you are told not to have it, but there are many people out there who have it.
What's so, that to do with us, the Jewish
well, people? There's two different things. Number one, if you ever get it in your head that you'd like to create this image, Torah says you can't do it. Don't do it.
Right.
That's number one. Number two, if you happen to be driving along the road and you see this image on the side of the road and you get this urge to get out and bow down, it says don't do that either.
Okay.
Okay? Right, so it's covering two different
covering
things.
Covering everything.
Right, okay. Right. Yes.
So this incense, you know, a lot of people burn incense to make the house smell nice.
Yeah,
like that.
That's permitted. You're allowed to burn incense to make the house smell nice.
But just not as part of a...
as a worship. Right. You can't do it to worship something.
There's a lot of things.
That's right.
Is the punishment karis for this?
The punishment for idolatry is skila.
Skila.
Is stoning. So what I just told you is not all derived over here. Here we only have two things: don't bow and don't worship. But the specific things I told you is derived from various verses throughout the Torah that the Gemara expounds upon. Now the rest of this, which is that I am Hashem, who is a jealous God. What does it mean, a jealous God?
Yeah, I don't understand it.
What does that mean? He's a jealous God?
He doesn't like you thinking about anyone else.
And that's exactly right. So here, of course, Hashem doesn't have emotions. He's not a human being. But what Hashem is saying is, I want you to treat avodah zarah, I want you to treat idolatry like infidelity.
Mm-hmm.
Just like in a marriage, where if a spouse is, God forbid, not faithful, there's a jealousy that occurs. So that is what Hashem is saying over here. If you go to another God, I'm going to be jealous. Now, what does that mean? Hashem's not jealous, but he's saying, in human terms, that's the type of reaction you're going to get from me. And you're not going to like it. You don't want that to happen. It's going to be jealousy. That's different than violating Shabbos. I don't like it when you violate Shabbos either. But I'm not jealous. But if you go to another God, I'm jealous. So again, it's not literal. It doesn't mean he's actually jealous, but it means that's the type of reaction that we will cause, God forbid, if we go to other gods. Don't do that. You don't want jealousy. That's a real, you know how people react when they're jealous. People lose all sense of proportion and they just lash out. And like Hashem says, that's what's going to happen if you go to other gods. Now the rest of it, when we're out of time, is what it says about visiting the sins of the fathers on the sons, and the third generation, fourth generation, and then doing kindness for 2,000 generations. So this part we're going to have to leave for next time. So that's anyway a talk which that's something which we have to understand throughout the whole Torah. This idea of visiting sins on the next generation, etc. So we'll pick up from there, mitzvah Hashem, next time, and we'll move on also to the next few of the Aseres Hadibros. So again, just to remind you, next week we will not be meeting. We'll meet again in 2 weeks' time, which is June the
2nd, 3rd,
June the whatever.
First Sunday.
June whatever.
First Sunday in June. Yes. Yes, I'm sorry, Dina, go ahead.
June 2nd,
okay.
Can you quickly say how they derive that there are 613 mitzvahs? Is this
that word? Is 613.
It says it in the Gemara.
The Gemara says it as Torah Shabbat Path. The oral Torah says there are 613 mitzvahs.
Okay, that was just...
Yeah. Now, one of the hints to it, which I mentioned before, is Torah Tziva Lanu Moshe. Moshe commanded us Torah. And the gematria of Torah is 611. And Hashem told us two. That's 613. That's a hint. But it's not a derivation.
Okay.
For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. He does not make money off the site, but he does need money in order to run the site. Those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.